please in due to call upon Brother Jim Cowie to give to us the word of exhortation. Thank you.
Presiding brother and my beloved brethren and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ, I have been asked especially by Brother David Horgan, the recorder of the Enfield Ecclesia, to convey to you the loving and fraternal greetings of the members of the Enfield Ecclesia. And last Tuesday evening I was asked by Brother John Martin to convey his warmest regards to you. He has very fond memories of his time here at the Napton Ecclesia. I wanted to say something this morning, should I say this afternoon, I'm quite used to saying this morning, because our meetings of course are in the morning in Australia. I wanted to say something that would be relevant to the times in which we live. And I've chosen to speak, brethren and sisters, on Isaiah 58. I don't want you to turn to that chapter immediately, because I would like you to join me in the 24th chapter of Matthew, that we might introduce the remarks that we have and to show the relevance of Isaiah 58 to the times in which we live. What makes our fellowship so pleasurable, brethren and sisters, is that we share a common attitude of mind, not simply a name. We're all Christadelphians. We all have the same basic fundamental beliefs. Sad to say, and it will one day be otherwise, sad to say, we sometimes experience differences of attitude towards the truth. Where we find the same attitude towards the truth, we find nearly a perfect fellowship. A fellowship that is only broken by our imperfections, sometimes by our folly. Brethren and sisters, I find a oneness of feeling all around the world with those who understand how the truth ought to be lived and why it should be lived the way we know it should be lived. And a correct attitude towards the way the truth should be lived is essential, we believe, to ultimately find a place in the kingdom. And it's attitude that Yahweh is interested in. He wants our minds, brethren and sisters, as we pointed out last evening, and he wants the attitude of our minds to be like his. And that's what Isaiah 58 is all about. And when the Lord gave the warning that comes at the end of the Olivet prophecy in Matthew 24, it was attitude of mind that he was concerned about in the last generation of Christadelphians, which of course is ourselves. He was concerned about the attitude of mind that we would have towards our brethren and sisters, both near and far. And so he warns of the coming of that great day and says in verse 42 of Matthew 24, "Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come." You will know the times and the seasons, but not the hour. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Unfortunately, brethren and sisters, there are houses, ecclesial houses, being broken up through the dilatoriness of those who are the good man or good men of the house, the stewards. Therefore, verse 44, "Be ye also ready." Be ye getting ready, says Rotherham. There's got to be constant activity. "For in such an hour as you are not thinking, the Son of Man cometh." I've given you the literal translation. "Who then?" And the question is posed. "Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household to give them their meat in due season?" Now, brethren and sisters, you are probably aware of the fact that the last two lines of verse 45 is an allusion, perhaps a quotation deliberately, from Psalm 145, verse 15. We shall look at that psalm in a moment, and we'll see why it was that the Lord lifted those words from Psalm 145 and wove them into his comments here in Matthew 24. Because he proceeds to say, talking about the wise and faithful steward, who is able to give meat or food in due season to the brethren and sisters over whom he has responsibility, he says, "Blessed," verse 46, "is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing." Now there is the correct attitude of mind, feeding the ecclesia, brethren and sisters, and we're all involved in that in some degree, whether we be the brethren who have charge of the ecclesia by appointment, whether we be speakers, expositors, Sunday school teachers, or mothers in the home, we all have a duty to build up the ecclesia of God. We are stewards of the things of the truth. And brethren and sisters, not one of us is exempt from the warning that is here given, or from the encouragement that is offered. Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. I'll give you the world, along with Abraham. But if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin, look at the words of verse 49, shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and to drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and an hour when he's not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the play actors. And there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Did the Lord expect that in the last days before his return, that Christadelphians would become pugilists and be fighting and smiting with the fist? He talks there in verse 49 about smiting his fellow servants. And you do that with a fist. And this morning our exhortation is titled, A Fist or a Fast? And that's what Isaiah 58 is all about. The choice between the fist or a fast. And you and I must make that choice, and it's all to do with our attitude of mind. An attitude which is expressed in what we do for our brethren and sisters. And the question we must ask ourselves this morning is whether or not we have a negative approach to the truth, whether that approach is self-centered and introverted, or whether our approach to the truth is outgoing, extroverted, whether it is an approach that is positive, that desires to build and to restore and to establish. And Isaiah 58 will help us in that regard. The Lord was not talking about brethren who would literally use their fists, although you'll be shocked by this. In my personal experience, I have known ecclesias who have tried to sort out some problems with the fist. You're amazed, I know, but it's true. The Lord is not talking about that, though. He's talking about an attitude of mind. In a day when you are not thinking, he said in verse 44. It's all there in the mind, isn't it, brethren and sisters? And if we are expecting his return, we will live in accordance with that. And it will be seen in our attitude towards our brethren, in our desire to build up, that we might have the double epithet which will be given to those who are found to be of this attitude of mind, a restorer of the breach. Or should I say, a repairer of the breach and a restorer of paths to dwell in. So this morning we're going to be talking about a fist. You come back with me now to Psalm 145 and see how it is that the Lord's mind was in this psalm as he spoke those words. And then we shall reflect upon Isaiah chapter 58. Psalm 145. It's a glorious psalm, but we'll just take verses 14 to 16. Yahweh upholdeth all that fall. How do you uphold someone that has fallen? You've got to use your arms and your hands to lift them up, don't you? Can you do that with a fist? No, you can't. He raiseth up all those that be bowed down. The eyes of all wait upon thee, and thou givest them their meat. Look at the words. This is the quotation that is made by the Lord. He's extracting it from here. Thou givest them their meat in due season. That's the attitude of a wise steward in the ecclesia. It's Yahweh's attitude towards his creation, and particularly towards his children. Look at the next words of verse 16. Thou openest thy hand, and satisfiest the desire of every living thing. So the attitude of Yahweh towards his creation is to open his hand, brethren and sisters, that coming forth from that hand there might flow the blessings that will sustain that creation. Yahweh's attitude is not one of closing the hand that he might smite with the fist, but rather of giving. Let's have a look at Israel in the times of Isaiah, in Isaiah 58. What were they doing? Well, here were the mighty religious men of the nation. Here were the ones who set themselves up as the paragons of virtue. And Isaiah was sent to them in verse 1 of chapter 58 to say this. Yahweh commands him, cry aloud and spare not. You'll notice from the margin that for the word aloud, the alternative is given. For in the Hebrew the word means to cry with the throat. And the Oriental throat, brethren and sisters, when it was used in that way, was able to produce the sound which was, as it were, the whole being of the man being brought forth. There are some of us who can speak like that sometimes. When we use our whole being to speak and not just the voice, here at the very base of the throat, the man would conjure up the words and speak them forth with the zeal of his being, so that everybody could see that he really meant what he was saying. It simply wasn't a question of words. This man was fully behind what he said. Why did Yahweh ask that of the prophet? Was it not that he was saying to Isaiah, "You are in the midst of a people who demonstrate an outward religiousness. They seem to do all the right things, Isaiah, but their heart is not in it. Their attitude of mind is wrong. I want you to be different. If you're going to save them, you have to be different. Cry with your whole being, Isaiah. Mean what you say and do it, and you might turn them." And that essentially is what this chapter is all about. The right and proper attitude to helping others. Unless it's done with our whole being, brethren and sisters, it is ineffective. Cry aloud. Spare not. Don't spare yourself in this work, Isaiah. Lift up thy voice like a trumpet to call the attention of my people to their transgressions, and the house of Jacob their sins. Look at verse 2 of Isaiah 58. This is what the nation was doing. The character of the nation seemed to be quite religious. "Yet they seek me daily." What's wrong with that? Nothing, of course. "They delight to know my ways." No problem. "As a nation that had done righteousness," as it should read, "and forsook not the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching to God." Now, that verse, brethren and sisters, simply taken by itself, would seem to be a prescription for success. If all of us could meet those requirements of delighting to know God's ways, of having done righteousness and not forsaking the ordinances of God, of asking the ordinances of justice, and of taking delight in approaching to him, we would be perhaps quite happy with that. But God wasn't happy with it. Why wasn't he happy? Because of the attitude of mind in which they did it. And they were negative. They were self-centered in their religion. And what they did, brethren and sisters, they did in order that they might gain some sort of dividend for themselves. So the measured sacrifice that they made for the truth was that they might gain something from it at the end. Hence, verse 3. "Wherefore have we fasted," say they, "and thou seest not?" We're fasting. "Why haven't you recognized what we're doing?" they said to God. "Look at us. Look at the sacrifices that we've gone to. Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge?" And God's answer comes back through the prophet, "Behold, in the day of your fast." Notice, your fast. And God uses the word fast in the next few verses 6 times, because it was a fast of flesh. "In the day of your fast, ye find pleasure." Fasting was meant, brethren and sisters, not to find pleasure, but to correct one's life and to focalize one's mind upon the things of Yahweh. They found pleasure and they exacted all their labors. Now, one translation gives it this way, that while you're fasting and finding pleasure, all your laborers in the field you're driving on. So here were the mighty men of Israel, ensconced in the temple, declaring their religious attitudes by their fasting and their sackcloth and their ashes and their miserable faces. And yet inwardly they were getting great pleasure out of this, because of course it was hypocritical. And the glory was for themselves, so they could say, as it were, "God, why haven't you noticed us?" Which is the exact opposite of what we were talking about last night. And when Israel was commanded to blow the trumpet over their sacrifices, it wasn't that they should be reminded or that they would remind God of what they had done, but that they might be reminded of what God had done through them. And that they might call God's attention to that, that they might be determined to continue in the way. Brethren and sisters, he was the other way. A calling of God's attention upon their sacrifice, which was made with the wrong spirit and the wrong attitude. So we read in verse 4, he upbraids them by saying, "Behold, ye fast for strife and debate and despite with the," look at the words, "fist of wickedness." Is it going to be a fist or a fast, God says to Israel? There's a special kind of fast that I want you to be involved in. It's a fast of self-denial, all right, but it's got a positive outcome. We're going to see that in a moment. And so here we meet the fist. And Isaiah, brothers and sisters, through the Spirit, takes one of the most effective portions of our anatomy, the hand. And he talks about that as a symbol of an attitude of mind. It is almost as though the Spirit wants us to raise our hand in front of our face and to look at it and to work out what we can do with a fist and what we can do with an open hand. And to have our attitudes so aligned with that of the Father, whose hand is open to feed all flesh, that when we fast, as we must fast, not a literal fast, but a fast where the flesh is denied. But when we fast, we are doing it for a positive reason. Not to bring glory to ourselves, but that we might bring to others the things that they need, their meat, in due season. Now, the fist is not the only symbol that is used in this chapter. There is in verse 9, at the end of that verse, reference to the putting forth of the finger. You'll see that. In my Bible, I have the words fist and finger highlighted and a line drawn between them. Because you see, when these mighty men of Israel did deign to undo their hand, they only undid one finger, which they then pointed in the direction of their brethren in an accusing way. If I had come to this meeting this morning and the doorman had put forth his hand to welcome me with either a fist or a finger, I would have felt most uncomfortable. As it is, one of the few places where there is a firm handshake given. And I rejoice in that, because there's meaning behind it. What if the doorman had met you this morning with a clenched fist? "How are you, brother? Come in." Well, what if he pointed a finger? "What are you doing here this morning?" How would you feel? Feel very welcome, and you'd go away greatly edified, wouldn't you? See the point that Isaiah is making? When you fast, when you come into my house, and you wear your sackcloth and ashes, you're doing it for your own glory. And in doing that, you find yourself involved in arguments and fights and debates, because you see, you're looking inwardly to build up yourself, to establish your own righteousness, to prove that you're right and the other is wrong. And in doing that, you use the fist of wickedness and you point the finger of accusation. What is Yahweh's fast, brethren and sisters? Well, let's read on. In verse 4, having said that ye fast for strife and debate and to smite with the fist of wickedness, Yahweh says, "Ye shall not fast as ye do this day, to make your voice to be heard on high. Is it such a fast that I have chosen? A day for a man to afflict his soul," or as the margin has it more correctly, "to afflict his soul for a day? Is that what I want? No. Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Wilt thou call this a fast? An acceptable day to Yahweh?" No, brothers and sisters. God wants from us self-denial. He wants us to deny the flesh, its pleasures and its lusts. He wants us to frequent his house and to meditate upon his ways and to delight in approaching to him. He wants all the sacrifices that are required to keep that and to maintain that throughout our life. but he wants a right and proper attitude of mind at the same time. And what is that attitude of mind? It is the attitude of mind that is symbolised by the open hand. Now you read the following verses from verse 6 down to verse 12 with me. And I want you to notice the language that is used. And if you have a pencil or a pen, I would suggest perhaps that you might like to underline or circle or something. Highlight in some way the positive terms that are used. They're deliberately put there by the Spirit to impress this lesson upon us. I will emphasise them. You won't be able to miss them, I can assure you. All right? These terms are positive. They are what you might call effusive terms. They bubble over. There are, in this record, superlatives used. Phrases of the superlative language that God uses through the prophet to impress upon us the attitude of mind that we ought to have as we fast, which we do, not just one day, but every day of our lives. We deny the flesh. So here we have the language that is dynamic, as our attitude ought to be in the truth. Dynamic, that we might build and edify, and that we might establish and restore and recover. Is not this the fast, verse 6, that I have chosen? Look at the words. To loose the bands of wickedness. They were smiting with the fist of wickedness. Our attitude must be, brothers and sisters, to loose the bands of wickedness. That's a positive thing. How do you undo or loose something that is bound? With a fist. Look at it. What can I do with that? To loose bands of wickedness. I can't do anything with that. To undo the heavy burdens. How can I undo anybody's heavy burden with that? There's no means of undoing the straps around the beast of the animal. Is there? And to let the oppressed go free. So we've got loosing, undoing, to let go free. There are our positive terms. And that ye break every yoke. How do you break a yoke? With a fist. Look at verse 7. Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry? And to bring the poor that are cast out to thy house? When thou seest the naked, that thou cover him? And that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh? If we placed upon our presiding brother this morning the constraint of not undoing his hands when he comes to deal out the bread, we would not be able to remember the sacrifice of our Lord today. How could he deal the bread? With a clenched fist. How do you bring the poor to your house? With a clenched fist or a pointed finger? You must open your hand and lead him. How do you cover the naked? I can't remove my coat with a clenched fist, and neither can you. Brethren and sisters, if I hide myself from my own flesh, then like the unfaithful steward, I have not opened my hand to give them their meat in due season. I've used a clenched fist. And so in verse 8, we have more effusive terms. That if you do these things, if you open the hand to break the yoke, to release those who are locked up in sin, if you deal your bread to the hungry and cast it upon many waters, and you bring the naked and cover them, then we read in verse 8, shall thy light break forth. See how it's positive? There's nothing introverted about that. Thy light will break forth as the morning, and thine health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee. It will precede you, and the glory of Yahweh shall gather thee up, as the margin says. It shall be thy re-reward. Brethren and sisters, God is trying to impress upon us through the prophet that if our attitude is like his, then he will make sure that the reward is given. And there will be, brothers and sisters, for us, the superlatives of life in the kingdom. What a reward that's going to be. And so verse 9 he says, then thou shalt call, and Yahweh shall answer. He won't, like verse 3, close his ear to the cry. We won't have to worry about whether or not we get an answer, brethren and sisters. Thou shalt call, and Yahweh will respond. And he shall say, here I am. But you've got to do something about it. If thou take away from thee the yoke, and the putting forth of the finger and speaking vanity, if thou, excuse me, if thou draw out, notice the words, draw out, positive, thy soul to the hungry, and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall thy light rise in obscurity, and thy darkness be as the noonday. And Yahweh shall guide thee continually, and satisfy thy soul in drought, and make fat thy bones. You can perhaps see, again, an allusion to Psalm 145 and verse 15. He opens his hand to satisfy the desire of every living thing. And thou shalt be like a watered garden, and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. And they that shall be of thee shall build. See how it concludes? They shall build the old waste places, upholding the things, brethren and sisters, that we know to be right, that we might establish the truth firmly for successive generations. There will not be, in our case, successive generations, except in the kingdom age. But it is our responsibility to establish the truth for successive generations, to build the waste places, and thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations. And if you do that, you shall be given a double epithet. This is it. And the Messiah was preeminently the one who was called the repairer of the breach and the restorer of paths to dwell in. And that is the reward for those whose attitude of mind is symbolized by the open hand and not by the clenched fist or the pointing finger. Now you have a look with me at the first verse of Isaiah 59. The word is an amazing thing, brethren and sisters. It's only our minds that limit it. I've given you one theme out of Isaiah 58, but it doesn't end in Isaiah 58. The mind of God sweeps on in Isaiah 59 to culminate in the work of his Son. And look at the first words of that chapter. Behold, Yahweh's hand is not shortened and it cannot save. What does that mean? How do you shorten a hand? There's my hand, brethren and sisters. How do I shorten it? Take an axe and cut the fingers off? No, not necessary. I shorten my hand by clenching my fist. There it is. The open hand. I shortened it. Yahweh's hand is not clenched that he can't save. But look at Israel. Verse 2. Your iniquities have separated between you and your God, and your sins have hid his face from you that he will not hear. Why? Why had he closed his ear to their cry? Why wouldn't he respond to their call, brothers and sisters? Look at verse 3. For your hands are defiled with blood. How do you get blood on your hands? By hitting someone with a fist. Or by clenching it around a knife. And your fingers with iniquity. Have a look at the end of verse 6. Their works are works of iniquity, and the act of violence is in their hands. There's the theme of Isaiah 58, isn't it? The hand. Yahweh's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, brothers and sisters. And he set forth one who was the son of the right hand. Psalm 80, verse 17. And that hand was upon the end of an arm. And God looked around Israel. But all those who profess to be righteous and were so in their own eyes, who were fasting. But he saw none who were fasting as they ought to fast. He saw none with a positive attitude, but he had himself towards that nation to repair the breach and to restore the paths, to bring men to God. And so he provided his own hand, which was not shortened, that it might not save. Verse 16 of Isaiah 59. And he saw that there was no man, and wondered that there was no intercessor. Therefore his arm brought salvation unto him, and his righteousness, it sustained him. God, brethren and sisters, extended his arm, his right arm, towards us. And on the end of his arm, as there is on the end of mine, there was a hand. And the Son of Man, whom he made strong for himself, the Son of the right hand. And his hand was opened like the faithful steward who gave his brethren their meat in due season. And when the time came for him, in the last hours, in the upper room, to break the bread, he dealt it to them, brethren and sisters, with the open hand. And no one ever fasted like him. No one ever denied the flesh more than he did. No one ever had cause to put the flesh down as that man. And yet his attitude was one that was desirous of building and restoring, of bringing men to God. You and I, brothers and sisters, have come to remember him who put on righteousness, verse 17, as a breastplate and a helmet of salvation upon his head, and he put on the garments of vengeance for clothing. And he did what the prophet was commanded to do, to cry with all his being. He was clad with zeal as a cloak. And it was that zeal to build and to restore that brought to him the double epithet that you and I will one day be given, we hope, if our attitude is that of the open hand. You shall be called the repairer of the breach and a restorer of paths to dwell in.